Welcome to Drive Time, the UCLA Anderson Fully Employed MBA Program podcast. My name is Dylan Stafford. I'm an assistant dean here at UCLA, and I am your host. And today I have an incredibly involved student leader, Mark Lee, who is my guest. We're in my office on a Thursday afternoon, just after lunchtime. Thanks for making the time to be here, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Dylan. I appreciate it.
I'm really looking forward to this interview because you're so involved. And not only are you involved with student government, but you're TAing classes with Dean Olien and Professor Guber in the upcoming leadership course. You've been on 4 global immersions and you're about to go on your 5th.
That's right.
So you've been a multi-continental type person. You've been a leader on FEMBA Council. You're an entrepreneur in your career and you're married with 2 children. So for our listeners, Mark is to me a great exemplar of jump in with both feet and really, you know, find all the opportunities this place has to offer. So it's just a thrill to get to be together today. So to get started, why don't we jump right in with, you know, a little bit of your background? You know, what could people know about you in terms of, you know, where you grew up, where you went to college before, some things like that?
Sure, absolutely. So I moved out to Los Angeles after I graduated from Harvard in 2002. I graduated with a degree in archaeology and social anthropology. I think that stems from the social aspect of just wanting to get to know people, get to know cultures. There was a time during my college career when I was destined to be pre-med, or so I thought, or so unfortunately that my father had wished upon me. But I had taken
none of our listeners have ever had a parent nudge them towards medicine. Never do I see that in their essays.
So after I actually took a year off during college and worked for a production company out here in Los Angeles. And what I basically realized was for the job, the entry level job that I would get after graduation from college, a lot of what I would need to know for the job, I would learn on the job. The nature of being an assistant or an intern at a production company was you learn as much as you can, as fast as you can. Mm. So I went back to college and I tried to use that time in college instead of, you know, for what was for me drudging through organic chemistry. I decided to study things that really interested me, but that I didn't necessarily want to do for a living. And so for me, that was archaeology. The department was there was only 7 of us in per graduating year. We had the entire museum to ourselves. We had the entire staff to ourselves. It was a great opportunity to be able to get to know the faculty, and it was a great experience. And so when I moved out here, though, I was ready to dive in, feet first, both feet, into the entertainment industry. And so I've been working in the entertainment industry since 2002 on the production side, development side, working with writers and directors, financiers, film funds, co-financing, developing scripts, attaching actors, getting financing, getting independent films into Sundance, Cannes Film Festival, getting distribution. And it's been great, and I love every moment of it. I'm married to Jenica. We have 2 children, Mason, who is about to turn 7, and Juliet, who is 3. So when I first got into FEMBA, they were 4 and almost 1. So talk about jumping into a big commitment when you feel like you already are overcommitted. That was quite a moment when so to speak we as a family decided that that pursuing an MBA at Anderson was definitely something that that we were going to do. We joke at home that we are getting an MBA, not just I'm getting an MBA, because it's taken so much trade offs and sacrifices on all of our parts to be able to do that, but. I grew up in Connecticut, but you know, I've lived in LA for now almost 15 years, something like that.
Yeah,
so
I came in 2002 also. So okay. we arrived the same year.
That's right. So it's been great, but you know, I literally woke up one morning and turned to my wife and said, "I think I'm going to apply to Anderson to get my MBA." Now I'm sure that there are a lot of, you know, typical guys who say a lot and request a lot of things when they roll over to their wife in the morning in bed and request something. But I guarantee you going over to the public library and asking to get a GMAT book is not one of them.
Nope. That's not pillow talk, typically spoken.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it was just literally a moment in time when, you know, I decided that where I was professionally, it was something that I needed. It was something that I felt like it could benefit from, And when I started looking more and more into Anderson, what was great about Anderson was its FEMBA program specifically. I had always considered in the back of my mind, and for any of the people listening, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who are always saying, well, you know what, I'd like to go to business school, but I've got a good thing going with my work. If I take 2 years off to go to business school, what is the opportunity cost? What am I going to miss out on? You know, I think a lot of the people in the entertainment industry, you feel like you're on a certain track. You're in certain people's Rolodexes, not that Rolodexes exist anymore, and you feel like you can't get away for those 2 years. So FEMBA's program that allows you to work full-time and still get your MBA was kind of the best of both worlds, and to me it was very much a no-brainer. So when I applied to business school, I only applied to Anderson, FEMBA.
We love that. Music to our ears. And you know, I'm embarrassed doing this with you because you actually know how to produce and develop podcasts, and I'm still winging this. So one of the things I left out in my introduction of you is that you're the founding partner of Halo Media Group. So you're a successful entrepreneur, and that's an important thing for our listeners to know. Where were you in the continuum of your career? You had already founded Halo?
Right. So I'd already founded Halo. I work with some other producers. We have a whole bunch of projects on our slate. When I transitioned to FEMBA, I decided to kind of scale back some of the projects that I was specifically overseeing, knowing that I needed to, you know, I wasn't going to come to FEMBA and do it, you know, do it halfway. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to come, and maybe that's just kind of the nature of a lot of people. When you do something, you want to do it well. And so fortunately, I was also in a position where, you know, the entertainment industry goes through ebbs and flows, and sometimes things are going right away. It's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. And so I was going through a period where, you know, some of the projects that were about to go ended up waiting for a moment. They were put on pause because an actor had a scheduling conflict and couldn't do it for 9 months. And so I decided, let me look into this. And fortunately, you know, I was able to scale back some of my projects, put them with other, you know, partners, producing partners that I have, and really concentrate on the MBA.
Seems like you may have a decent tolerance for risk. You know, if you're willing to go from Connecticut to Boston with social anthropology to bring you to Hollywood, and then you're willing to go sort of from, you know, being the entrepreneur producer to getting an MBA. I mean, you're a person who seems to be willing to take sort of steps into the unknown, see what you can find when you get there. Is that fair?
I would say that's fair, especially if you compare me to anyone that perhaps my parental figures would hope that I would be, meaning obviously a doctor. They don't believe that anymore. Fortunately, they've been very supportive of my endeavors. But like I think like a lot of parents and a lot of people who and a lot of guardians, you want stability. You want your children to have stability. You know, I want my children to have stability. And meanwhile, of course, I want to be able to go and do something different and do something risky and really put myself out there. Moving to Los Angeles was definitely risky. You know, going to the entertainment industry, sure, I never really thought of it as risky. I thought of it as something that I love doing, something that I could do professionally, and something, I mean, literally, you know, if I had to describe what I do, my profession, I would just say that I love what I do for a living. And to a large extent, you know, bringing it to am I a switcher? Am I an enhancer? I mean, to a large extent, I feel like I'm an enhancer. I mean, if I could do exactly what I'm doing now, perhaps just on a bigger scale, then that's exactly where I want to be. But doing it on a bigger scale is kind of where Anderson came in for me. I felt like, all right, I see where I am in the entertainment industry. I see the opportunity. I see that a lot of the people that I'm raising funding from are people in business worlds and other businesses. And there are times when I feel like the entertainment industry kind of, you know, works very distinctly in its own silo. It works in its own ways. There are a lot of things that happen because that's the way that's always been done. And now after 2.5 years of Anderson, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than here. Well, that's the way that it's always been done. I mean, the opportunity is all about, you know, to a certain extent is about disruption and not doing things just because that's always the way that they've been done. I think actually coming to Anderson kind of mitigates a lot of risk. I mean, to me, I think getting an MBA, really does create a sense of stability in a more or less more unstable world or uncertain world. Not to say that it's confining, though. You know, I don't think an MBA is confining in any certain way. I think it opens a lot of doors. And, you know, it's that balance between agility and productivity. It's saying, you know, I want to be agile to be able to take advantage of opportunities as soon as they come up. But obviously, you don't want to be so agile that you're not actually concentrating on any one thing at any particular time and not really being that productive. I think the nice thing about Anderson is that I came to Anderson to learn the best practices from other industries. Because a lot of the people that I'm working with, a lot of the investors are people from other industries. And there's nothing more frustrating for them than to be pitched a movie project that perhaps they could invest in. And I'm sitting there telling them, yes, technically, you could spend $100 on a film. They use the $100, and it's completely worthless at the end of the $100. There's a chance. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we're pitching them great quality products that have great selling potential. But strictly from a numbers standpoint, you know, if you buy land for $100, you can at least sell it. Granted, you'll take a loss if market goes down, but you can sell it and get a certain amount of money back. You can sell things for parts. You can have some sort of process by which you are able to recoup some of your investment. That's why they say, I mean, investing in movies is extraordinarily risky. It's because there's literally a risk of all the money being spent on something and have it not go anywhere. Now, granted, that's where opportunity comes in. You can show people that you have a track record, you have a slate that mitigates the risk. But inherently, it's a very risky business. That's very hard for someone that might be coming from a much less risky business to be able to feel comfortable investing in the entertainment industry. Now, there are certain things about the entertainment industry that are particularly sexy for an investor. You know, they get to be on set, they get to meet the actors, they get to come to the red carpet premiere. But at the end of the day, the bottom line, it's a business. And so a lot of what I do for a living and what I love about it is that I straddle this line between business and creativity.
Nice.
So I get to work with the directors and the writers and the actors. I get to work with people who are so passionate about what they do. They move 3,000 miles just because they're so passionate about what it is that they're doing. And if you get enough people who are passionate about a particular project all in one room, then there's great things that happen in that room. Again, at the end of the day, there's a bottom line. So you have to keep to budgets. You have to keep to expectations. You need to understand your target audience and your target market, and that's where the responsibility is to those investors. But I wanted to be able to come here and learn best practices from other industries, also learn the vocabulary of business outside of the entertainment industry. And that was my expectation coming into Anderson. That's what I really wanted to get out of it when I first arrived.
Nice. I love this. And I want to transition to your experience here because, you know, that's part of it. But I think that we're focusing just on your why UCLA, why MBA, why FEMBA is great for our listeners. Anything else you would say? You know, it's sometimes it's too soon to know the value of your experience because you're still in it. But how have you seen your business thinking, your acumen, how you comport yourself in those investor conversations? How has the MBA impacted your experience of yourself as a professional, you know, just this far?
I think when I first got to Anderson, I decided I was not going to take entertainment courses.
No.
I was not going to be as involved. I was going to be involved in the Entertainment Media Association, which is a great, great student organization here. There are lots of opportunities to hear from industry professionals. But again, I came here to learn from others, to learn from outside the box. And I wanted to take best practices from other industries and then apply them to the entertainment industry. Mm. So I actually got very involved in the Center for Global Management. I took courses outside of the entertainment world. I went on a particular type of course called the Global Immersion, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. And those learning and additionally, I learned from my classmates, most of whom are in industries, not in entertainment. Now, it's great. We have a lot of entertainment students who are FEMBA. There were a lot of entertainment students in my section. But for the most part, people were engineers. People were managers. People were product managers. People were in brand management. People were financial advisors. And so being able to learn the perspectives of those classmates who come with several years of experience, working experience, how do they tackle the same problem that I'm looking at in class compared to how I look at it and how I would solve it? And it was really refreshing to see so many different ways of solving the problem. There's no right answer. Mm. There are wrong answers sometimes, but really there's no one single right answer. And it was really that was the best learning experience for me. I would say the other learning experience was in the very first quarter at Anderson, you know, one of the core classes, statistics. And I haven't taken a math class since my junior year in high school. I think I took calculus. And
nice.
That was the last time I picked up a calculator, probably. And so statistics was eye-opening. And
who'd you have?
I had Professor John Mamer.
Oh, he's great.
Who was great. I think we actually have a list of Mamerisms that I'll have to dig up. And that first group meeting that I had with my study group, you know, we went over some of the answers that we had for some of our questions, and I had all the wrong answers.
Nice. Welcome to business school.
Yeah, all the wrong answers. I thought, what did I get myself into here? But fortunately, you know, I have this tendency of saying, look, I don't want to hold anyone back. Mm. You guys all got the right answer. You guys go ahead. I'll figure it out on my own. And I realized that was basically, you know, that just meant I was going to fall further and further and further behind.
Hmm.
And one of my group mates was really nice. And they said, look, if you didn't get it, like, let's take the time now and we'll help you through it. And so they helped me through it. And that was when I really realized that helping me through it not only helped me catch up, but it also helped them have an even firmer knowledge of the material. Nice. Because they were able to actually teach me and be able to become that much more familiar with the material themselves. And I think for me that was also eye-opening, because it really made me think, look, learning is not just about learning what you don't know. It's also a matter of teaching someone next to you who might not know it, or teaching the next generation of students, or passing that knowledge on in a way that not only helps them, but it also helps you as well. And so we kind of, that group for that entire quarter, we kind of developed this no man left behind philosophy. And no matter, you know, how busy we were, we would take the time to say, you didn't get the right answer as all, or you didn't get the same answer as all of us. Let's work through it and let's lead you through it until you do understand. And then we'll move on, because we're not trying to compete with each other. I think that's the other nice thing about FEMBA is that we all have jobs. We're not competing for the same job upon graduation. We all have jobs. We're here to learn, you know, so it doesn't feel super competitive. We're here to learn. Let's learn. Let's learn from each other, and let's learn from the material as well. And I think that particular philosophy has really carried me through the rest of my time here.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love that. That is, yeah. Because we have a goal when we build a class, which is to create a collaborative learning culture. You know, Dean Olean loves to say, look, my job is to go hire amazing researchers, amazing teachers. Your job is to go find people who are hungry to learn. And if we put that together in the class, and that's coupled with, you know, half the learning comes from the front of the room and half of it's lateral, left and right, you know.
Absolutely.
That's just great.
I think that's what kind of led me to become more involved at Anderson. Yeah.
Well, let's speaking of being more involved, let's kind of pivot towards, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about. Let's start with FEMBA Council, because I do, as an observation, think that the depth and breadth of engagement, the number of people involved in FEMBA Council, and the quality of the conversations is one of the reasons this program can stay nimble and can evolve and sort of keep up with the world out there. And it's, you know, and it takes time. So let's talk about FEMBA Council, because you're on the executive board. Tell people a little bit who don't know about that, what that's entailed, why you got involved, and what you've been doing there.
Absolutely. So the FEMBA Council is the student council for the FEMBA program. Each section has three representatives, and there are five sections per class times three classes. It's about 45 people that are representatives, plus an executive board of seven people. What's great about FEMBA Council, specifically to Anderson, is that we feel like Anderson listens. I think that there are a lot of student councils, whether it was when you were in high school or whether you were in college, And, you know, a lot of people run to be able to put it on their resume and move on. And they're involved and they enjoy it, whether it's because they get to plan events and they're social or they get to plan certain initiatives. But a lot of times, at least in my experience, a lot of times, sometimes an administration might you know, say, hey, that's nice. I'm glad that you're involved. I'm glad that you care. But not every administration actually does anything about it because they know that if they would just wait a year or two, then it's no one's problem. Then the next council will have new initiatives. But the difference is that Anderson actually, you know, really listens to the voice. There's always administrators at the meetings, in every meeting. There are multiple ways that the council can get involved with regards to the greater Anderson experience. The resources at Anderson and the administration, it's an open door policy. You really can walk in and say, hey, you know, here's something, here's a problem, or here's a suggestion, or here's something great that happened. And we should, you know, we should repeat the thing that was so great, or we should try and do something to mitigate something that might have gone wrong. And it's a great way to get involved. It's a great way to get to know your classmates. And for me, ultimately, you know, council has been a way to give back. For me, council is a matter of serving. I feel like I'm serving my classmates. It has nothing to do with, oh, I have some sort of representative title, or, oh, I'm on the executive committee as something that I can put on my resume. It's not about that at all. It really is. I mean, if I could be a part of this and never have a title, never have anything like that, but just be able to be in a room where I can, in one ear, listen to the needs of my classmates, and then in the other ear, listen to what is possible and what the resources are at Anderson, and be able to find a way to marry those two together, you know, without any sort of recognition, that's fine with me. I love working together with other people who feel the same way, especially the other people on the executive committee. I actually think that I think the only reason why I would want to publicize that certain events or certain resources are brought to the students by the FEMBA Council is not for credit. It's more so that students that are out there understand whom they can go to when they have an idea.
Yeah.
You know, we might have 52 people sitting in a room making suggestions, but let's be honest, you know, I find myself more as a conduit of information and ideas from our student body, from the students. And we can really relay those, or we can put those ideas through some sort of brainstorming session to be able to understand what is going to work and why. And then we can bring those to an administration. But you know, honestly, I want people who are not on the council to say, oh, wouldn't it be great if, FEMBA students benefit from an event or from a resource like this, if only we had it. Whereas perhaps if the FEMBA council, you know, is somewhat silent, they won't know whom they can go and talk to. But if people know that they can actually turn to the representatives that are in their section and they say, hey, I've got this idea, where do I go with this? Then that person can bring it to the rest of council. They can bring it to the administration that will actually be able to do something about it. And I think that's a special relationship that is unique, unfortunately, but it's very unique and really powerful to giving all of Anderson's students a more valuable experience than when they first got here.
Well, on behalf of the administration, thank you for your time, because I've gone to two or three FEMBA Council meetings a quarter for over a decade, you know, and it's amazing to me because it's a multi-generational commitment. It's not just one good year of leaders. It's not like the 2017 class is unique with you and Julia and the team. You know, you guys are kind of in a long train of people who've carved out these extra hours to help the school grow and flex and the global immersions. You know, a lot of the big components came directly from student feedback. You know, we want more global experiences. We want more flexibility, you know, and you know, it takes a little bit, but then you architect programming that responds to what people are asking for. So, well, another contribution with the Entertainment and Media Association, you're a vice president on that. So we have 40 plus student clubs here, lots of ways to get involved. So in addition to FEMBA Council, Tell people about that role you have and some of the t- takeaways. You Joss Whedon and...
Sure, absolutely. So my role on the Entertainment Media Association is I'm a vice president of special projects. Now, that there are a lot of various different positions that you can have and you can get involved with at EMA. I believe that you can help organize an entertainment career night where they invite lots of recruiting companies in, and you can actually sit down and have dinner with them. They organize, tons of events, too many that I can actually even list here. Fortunately, with special projects, it afforded me the ability to think outside the box a little bit, not just do what has been done in the years past and repeat. I have a bit of freedom to be able to do things that haven't been done before in the past. And so under the vice president role, there are a few directors, so to speak, not film directors, but directors, like managing directors. And one of them actually reached out to Joss Whedon, and we had talked about various different speakers that we feel like could come to Anderson and broaden the Anderson entertainment experience. And Joss Whedon specifically had a super PAC going, and he was trying to get the vote, get people to go vote earlier this summer and this fall. And he had used his resources that he had for filmmaking, and with a lot of the actors to be able to go out and vote. Now, of course, he had specific ideas of who he would prefer that they go vote for, and he wasn't shy about sharing them. But the ultimate end of the day story was that he wanted people to go out and vote, and we wanted him to be able to come. And he's been very vocal about that concept of giving people a voice and making sure people know that they have a voice. Not even that he's giving it to them, but that they have a voice and that they can voice that opinion through a vote. And so he was happy. He came to Anderson, and we organized an event at Korn Lecture Hall, which seats about 400 people. MEMS, which is the Center for Media, Entertainment, and Sports, was very gracious, and they provided some resources for us to be able to have a bar and some food as for a networking reception that would take place afterwards. So special thanks to Sanjay Sood and those good folks over there. But it was a great way to be able to interface with so many different aspects of Anderson to make one event possible. And so that included, whether it was working with MEMS or working with the administration to be able to make sure we had the correct resources and the correct audiovisual, to make sure we had the alumni, involved, the alumni base, so that they could know about it, the marketing and communications department, so that they could create emails and blogs. We had a reporter come in, and she wrote an article about that particular event as well. And so it's that, and that was just one event. And so, it's been great because there are so many opportunities and that the Entertainment Media Association forwards to its, not only to its members, but to all Anderson members. And like you said, that's just one club, right, out of 40. And so I'm not involved in other clubs as much.
Well, you can't do them all.
Right. Yes, there are only so many hours in the day, and there are only so many, when you talk about time management, when you didn't have any extra time before you got to Anderson, and somehow you're moving things around so that you can actually make it work as it is.
And I forgot to, for people who don't know Joss Whedon, his claim to fame is.
Right, so Joss Whedon is probably most recently known for his for directing The Avengers, but honestly, he's been immensely involved in the entertainment industry for a very long time. He created Firefly, which is a very well-known TV, Buffy, Vampire Slayer series, also very popular, been very involved in the Marvel comic book world, or I should say universe. So yes, he's very well-known for his storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you mentioned time management, and there's too much to cover. So we've talked a lot about the global immersions on some of the other podcasts. So let's just do a quick, but you've been on four.
I've been on four, that's
thus
right.
Thus far, and you got another one queued up.
I've got another one just in 3 weeks, I think, from today. And it's possible that by the time you guys hear this, I'll have already come back. But yeah, so my first immersion was in Greece, studying national debt with Ed Lemer, which was amazing. I honestly think that the global immersions are some of the best learning experiences here at Anderson. I know that there's a slight bit of extra cost, and obviously there's the time commitment, of needing to be away in another country for a week. And so obviously not everyone has the vacation days that to be able to do that. But I do think that if you're able to allocate a certain amount of time to be able to take a global immersion or two, preferably, it's absolutely worth every penny, every minute that you spend on it. Then I went to Vietnam with Professor George Abe, doing business in emerging markets. And then I went to South Africa with Gail Northrup to study social entrepreneurship, social innovation, really young companies that are really working very hard to make a social impact in that world. And then I was a TA / program manager for Thailand, Myanmar. Now, I'm not sure how many of you know about what's going on in Myanmar, but Myanmar more or less just had, you know, their first successful democratic national elections about a year plus ago. They were under military rule for about 50 years, so they're just starting to kind of open their doors in the past 5 to 10 years, and their world is changing very fast. And so it was really great to be able to go and, you know, witness, you know, I mean, you're basically there witnessing a living case study, to put it in business school terms, but you're there as things are changing. You're there when, you know, business owners and banks and, you know, entrepreneurs are there thinking of how they can turn this change into something really positive, and not just for them, but for the entire community. So it's really exciting. And then, yes, in a few weeks, in mid-March, I'll be going to Japan with Professor Ed Lemer again, comes full circle, where we'll be studying what lessons the U.S. can learn from the Japanese economy, especially as it relates to the aging economy that Japan has at the moment.
Well, yeah, you mentioned sort of history being made in Myanmar, but history was being made in Greece, because you were there when Europe was, what are we going to do? What, you know, like, how is this going to play out?
Absolutely. When we were in Greece, we were there just about 5 or 6 days prior to their third national election in about 9 months. And what was really fascinating about Greece was almost every guest speaker and every company that we visited had a different opinion of the future of Greece.
Wow.
Some thought that they might go back to the drachma. Some thought they would that you know, ultimately they would end up punting. You know, they would and try and deal with this another day. But this is a time when they had limited the ATM withdrawals for its citizens to something like, you know, $60 a day at most, or something. I mean, they had lines at the ATM because the banks would close, and the ATMs were limited to the amount of cash, just because they were so far in debt that they were paralyzed. And the thing about Greece is that, you know, I think when we were there, the unemployment rate was approximately 25%. Overall, but perhaps what's even more disturbing is that their under 35 unemployment rate was closer to 65%.
Yeah.
So you have the future of the country, people who are within a fairly great education system with engineering degrees who have nowhere to go except elsewhere. So they would get jobs elsewhere in Europe, and you have the future of Greece that are just, you know, there's the brain drain that's there, and it's immensely sad. But it was fascinating to learn. I mean, again, we were only there a week, but we were visiting the National Bank of Greece. You know, we would visit, you know, we visited banks, we visited companies. We, you know, McKinsey came and spoke to us about, they had done a huge, very in-depth analysis on what opportunities might be still available in Greece. So it was my first living case study. And for me, what was really great about these immersions is the story that you're a part of, the story that you learn. I mean, for Greece, it was what investment opportunities are there in an indebted country? Or, you know, how does a country get to this point? How does a country get to the point of being so in debt? And then what are the opportunities that can come from it?
Yeah. You know?
So, and every immersion has had its own story. And it's also a great way to get to know students who aren't in your section. And it's a spectacular way to get to know the professors.
Yeah,
I think people don't necessarily realize that, but professors are extraordinarily accessible at Anderson. Open door policy. You can go and meet with them anytime. They offer to take people to lunch, or you can have lunch or coffee. Obviously, you can just go to their office hours. But most students, I think, tend to feel like maybe, you know, they go to class and the class ends, and everyone leaves to go to the next class, or the professor leaves to go to the office. But, you know, especially when you're in an immersion, you realize I'm sitting next to them at dinner, I'm going out with them afterwards, you know, maybe we'll do something, you know, on a more cultural basis. And I think it gives you an appreciation for, you know, this is not just, you know, this is not only on global immersions. I mean, you can go and meet, yeah, and chat with all the professors, some of the most preeminent people in their field in the entire world, and you can just kind of go by their office and chat. And they love to get to know the students.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, because, yeah, you were there with Professor Lehmer, one of the economic voices that the world listens to, and you get to hear his perspective as you're seeing it, watching history happen, as you said. I love that phrase.
Absolutely.
Well, there's too much to talk about. You know, you're a FEMBA mentor, you're a teaching assistant, you're being a TA with Dean Olien and Professor Guber. I'd love everybody to know about that. You got to look Mark up on LinkedIn and reach out to him. But I think as we kind of come to the, and you're going to graduate with two specializations, both
Global management and entertainment management. That's
so
right.
You guys got to, if you're on this call, you got to look this guy up. Are you coming to FEMBAPalooza? We got to get your schedule. Maybe they can meet you then. But what I want to end with is, you know, because you've been above and beyond. You know, you're a partner, you're an entrepreneur, you've got probably more control over your calendar than most. But I want our listeners to hear some tips and tricks. You know, how do you manage, how do you manage your time? How are you, you know, how do you deal with all of these opportunities? And like you said, you want to, what did you say? Agile and productive. Mm-hmm. You want to be nimble, but you also want to get stuff done. So how have you found your balance as you've gone through this program? And, you know, you have a family.
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do it without my family, without the support of my wife and my two kids, to be honest, who often will hope and expect me to be at a certain assembly, school assembly, or a certain school play. I do try and make a lot of those major milestones, but you know, I can't be there for everything. And I think to a large extent, you know, I have to remember that for a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old, you know, one assembly is not necessarily less meaningful than a school play. I mean, to them, these are major moments, even though I might say the school plays more of a priority than a school assembly. But to be honest, you know, I need to remember that for them, there are certain moments that are really important to them. And I want to make sure that I'm there for those moments. But I think it's also a matter of communication. It's a matter of, so to speak, messaging. It's a matter of making sure that before I leave to go to class on a weekend, on a Saturday, that I actually look at my kids in the eyes and say, look, I'm going to be at school. I know I won't be here to take you to the park today, but I will be back at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and then we can do this, this, and this, and we can look forward to that, and we'll have a great time then. I think it comes down to picking your battles. I mean, I think a lot of times I felt like there are certain things that I would love to be able to take advantage of on campus. Like you said, there are a lot more clubs, there are a lot more speakers. Every week here we have special speakers here that are industry experts, leaders in their field, and they're here coming to Anderson. We don't even need to go to them. They're coming to us to speak to us, and I can't take advantage of all of that. So I have to you know, pick my battles. I also wouldn't be able to do it, obviously, with my wife, who's had to take up a lot of the lion's share of other responsibilities at home, because a lot of times, even if I'm not in class, I'm at home saying, okay, even though I'm home, I can't do all these different things because I've got a paper to write, or I've got a group call. But, you know, I think that because I've had their support from the very get-go, it's actually, that's why I say we are doing this together, because there's no surprises across the board. So that's definitely part of why I've been able to do as much as I have been able to, partially because they also understand that I'm getting a lot out of giving back to Anderson. Allows me to get a lot of Anderson back. A lot of the Anderson value back to me. I think they understood very early, because I communicate these things with them, that, you know, a lot of the value that I get, a lot of the lessons learned that I get when I come home, and talk about paying it forward. A lot of times I pay it forward to my children.
Explain that. So how do you pay an MBA forward to your kids?
Sure. Well,
what does a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old appreciate about your MBA?
Well, let me put it this way. There are a lot of things that my son, who's in first grade, comes home with, and he has a problem, he has an issue, he doesn't know how to deal with it. And I'll tell him, guess what? I run through those problems too.
Nice.
I have those things too, or I have homework that I need to do too. He was the lead in his first grade play. That was a Thanksgiving play, and he was the turkey, so to speak. And he had lines, and he had to learn these lines. Now, what's amazing is that he had to learn these lines right about the same time that I had to memorize my words for my presentation for Gap. It was at the same time. I said, "You know what, Mason? You know what we're gonna do? You stand up there, you run through your lines. I will sit here, and I will be your audience, and then we will switch." I will go up there and I will give my Gap presentation, which is basically a final group thesis. I will give my group presentation and you will be my audience. And he said, and that his face lit up so much because there were so many things that we actually kind of had these father-son moments because he's in school and I'm in school. And these were things that he could relate to now that I'm, even though I'm getting an MBA and he's in first grade. I mean, these are things that we could relate to with each other. The greatest part was that, you know, he had questions after my Gap presentation that were very pertinent. So
he asked about your financials, Dad. No, what's
it's like? Wait a second here. No. He's like, what if I understand this is an outdoor product, you know, that measures water consumption, but what if it snows? Then, you know, what happens then? Is it if it's too cold, will it still work? And I was like, wow, this is actually a totally pertinent question because you need to worry about, you know, weather, housing, and even though you want to create, you know, have a market entry all across the United States, there, you know, can this product work in 4 feet of snow or not? You know, that's a good question. So,
God, now where was your company? What was
so our company was a company called Taggle Systems, and they used radio technology to be able to monitor water meters remotely. So instead of sending out someone every 6 months to read the water meter, they would read the meter once an hour. And you know, among very many benefits, some of them were, you know, they could detect leaks because if your water usage never goes to zero over the course of a 24-hour period of time, that means you've got a leak of some kind. And that leads to water erosion and, you know, all sorts of other things. And obviously, wow. 10% less water usage or leaks is 10% less water that you have to treat, 10% less water you have to transport. And that's actually a huge cost of transporting water. So, you know, needless to say, during my Gap experience, I learned a lot about the water utility market. And so did my son, incidentally. So
I love his observation. Dad, what about when it snows? Wow. And where was your company based?
They were based in Sydney, Australia. So aside from all the global immersion travel that I had done, I also traveled with a Gap teammate, to Sydney, Australia. And we did primary research in Sydney and in just outside Brisbane and Melbourne as well.
My goodness. Well, I met your lovely wife, Jenica, and I met your children at the FEMBA Appreciation Lunch last Saturday. So, Jenica, if you're listening, thank you very much for loaning us your husband for the last 30 months. We'll give him back to you very shortly. And I hope that he's been very generous to the student body paying it forward. And I hope that, you know, it pays back in spades to the future of your family. Well, this is great, Mark. You're a fascinating person. And we didn't get to all the points. There's just way too much. But this has been a great half hour, 40 minutes. Thank you for your time. Thanks for coming in person such that we could have this conversation. And yeah.
No, it's my pleasure. It's, you know, I appreciate you having me in. And if there's any of the prospective students or any of the current students that want to be able to reach out to me, they can. I'm happy to talk to them about their possible future or existing Anderson experience.
Very great. Very great. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Mark Lee, FEMBA 2017, founding partner of Halo Media Group, and a very, very participatory leader here in our program. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.